Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. It's good to be with you all. My name is Mike Russert. I'm on staff here with youth and developing a new community across the river. And Greg is up north with our friends in Voyagers Lutheran Ministry. He and two of his daughters and his wife Chris and Janet Nurnberg and Karin Kratz are making these beautiful canoe paddles. So if you're on Facebook, go check them out on the Facebook page. They look amazing. There's pictures up there. I want to start off our time together as we talk about neighbors that we're afraid of. I want to start with this video, so please check this out.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught.
Maybe some of you recognize that song from the musical South Pacific, but I saw that this week, that video, and there's a lot of stuff that we as people need to learn, and there's a lot of stuff that we need to unlearn. And so I'm glad we're here today as a community learning how to not be afraid, learning how to move past fear of those neighbors in our lives and move into relationship. And God has something to tell us about that, and we have some stuff to do about that, and we're gonna be doing that together. So, fear, it's really powerful, right? It creates barriers between people. It separates us from one another, and if fear goes unchecked, it can lead to things like those post-its that were being placed on the man, things like hate and racism and greed. And so we are in the business together of checking that fear. And today we're going to talk a lot about stories and how stories can help us with that. So fear is powerful. You know, if you listen to the news, it's hard to miss it, right? I mean, today there'll be more protests in Baltimore after another black life was ended after an engagement with law enforcement. There's a lot of fear going on in all of those heartbreaking stories, whether it's in Ferguson or in Madison or here in our own city or Baltimore. We've also been hearing a lot about the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide, where 800,000 to 1.5 million people were killed in present-day Turkey around the time of World War I. And fear is a scary thing, and it can lead to some real big problems in our world. And the truth is, too, that fear is very natural, right? It's actually instinctual. We all know this fight-or-flight response that we have. It's about survival. But again, if we don't check that fear, it can lead into some really problematic things in our lives. And I think today's story, as we look at our globalized and interconnected world, if we don't find something in our lives to move beyond fear, if we don't have a more full story of those people in our lives that we're afraid of, things aren't going to get better. They're going to continue to get worse. So what do we need to do? You know, stories, as I was saying earlier, are very much at the core of what fear is all about. And stories are also the means that we can overcome our fear. And there's a woman from Nigeria. Her name is Chimamanda Adichie. She's a Nigerian author, and she has this amazing TED Talk called The Danger of the Single Story. And I want to show you a clip from that TED Talk.
Years later, I thought about this when I left Nigeria to go to university in the United States. I was 19. My American roommate was shocked by me. She asked where I had learned to speak English so well and was confused when I said that Nigeria happened to have English as its official language. She asked if she could listen to what she called my tribal music and was consequently very disappointed when I produced my tape of Mariah Carey. She assumed that I did not know how to use a stove. What struck me was this: she had felt sorry for me even before she saw me. Her default position toward me as an African was a kind of patronizing, well-meaning pity. My roommate had a single story of Africa, a single story of catastrophe. In this single story, there was no possibility of Africans being similar to her in any way, no possibility of feelings more complex than pity, no possibility of a connection as human equals. I must say that before I went to the US, I didn't consciously identify as African. But in the US, whenever Africa came up, people turned to me, never mind that I knew nothing about places like Namibia. But I did come to embrace this new identity, and in many ways, I think of myself now as African. So after I had spent some years in the US as an African, I began to understand my roommate's response to me. If I had not grown up in Nigeria, and if all I knew about Africa were from popular images, I too would think that Africa was a place of beautiful landscapes, beautiful animals, and incomprehensible people fighting senseless wars, dying of poverty and AIDS, unable to speak for themselves, and waiting to be saved by a kind white foreigner.
The danger of a single story. How many of you have been functioning with single stories in your lives? I think we all have to raise our hand. I'll admit to mine, and I'm going to tell you one in a little bit. But single stories are dangerous because we are so much more than a single story. We are complex. We are both people who are broken, and we are both people who have amazing gifts and abilities, and people who don't get it right all the time, and people who have this amazing capacity to be resilient and to love. And so we need to be tapping into the larger story and not buying that single story. And sadly, in our world, single stories sell, right? Our media, this isn't a critique of all media, but oftentimes we only get those stories that are going to make some bucks. And the ones that are violent and the ones that are shocking, those sell more papers and take up more ad space than the ones that are about beauty and love and wholeness. So we have to be pretty disciplined in how we seek out more than the single story. And you know what? The truth is, it's really easy to beat ourselves up for believing single stories. I felt really, really ashamed at times for the single stories that I have believed and then have seen that they're not the whole story. But shame doesn't fix things. So how do we move beyond fear into getting the whole story? I think it starts with compassion. And it starts with compassion for ourselves. We need to have compassion towards our fears. We need to accept that at times we're afraid and to not feel ashamed about that. But at the same time, as we are compassionate towards our fears, we can't become complacent in them. We have to go. We have to ask the questions. We have to seek more information. It's when we're complacent is when we don't take the extra step or ask that question or just do that one thing, maybe even look it up on the internet or find somebody who knows something about another person or culture that you can learn information from. When we don't do those things, we're missing out on this wealth of wisdom and beauty that's available to us. And the other first step is maybe the simplest step of all, and it's this. So we are all really good at breathing, right? Everybody here can breathe? Okay. It's the power of a breath. When you experience fear in your life, breathe. Take a breath. I like to think of this Hebrew word from the Bible, that's ruach, which means breath. And the Hebrew, in the book of Genesis, they describe God as the ruach, this breath in the world. And so I like to think, when I am taking in a breath, when I take that moment mindfully, just taking that deep breath, that I am actually inviting God into my body and into the space between me and the stranger that I fear. And when I have that space to breathe, it allows for me to see that other person not as a threat, but as another human being breathing the same air made by the same creator that I am made from. And that begins to open doors. So remember to breathe. Breathing helps us remember our shared humanity. There's another verse in the Bible shortly after this story about God as Ruach, and it's in Deuteronomy. And Deuteronomy is this story that Moses is telling to the Israelites about their lives in Egypt and how God has saved them from the slavery that they were in. And there's a verse that's repeated 36 times in the Old Testament or in the whole the Hebrew Bible, and it's printed there for you on your Sunday paper. It's this: "You shall love the stranger, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt." You know, ultimately, we are all strangers to one another. And when we can remember that, then we can begin to be hospitable to one another. It's when we remember that we are all in the same boat together that we can welcome one another and seek more of the story and move beyond that single story that we've been buying into. So I want to practice today moving into learning a larger story, learning more of a story than that single story maybe we've been told. And we're in South Minneapolis, and we've got Cedar Riverside right nearby. We have the largest Somali population in the United States. And I don't know if you heard in the news this week, but there were, I believe, six or so Somali men, young men, that were arrested because they were traveling on their way to Syria to fight with some terrorist organizations. And it'd be really easy to take that story that we've heard in the news and write a single story about all Somali men, that they're potential terrorists. But that's not true. That's not what's going on. And so how do we figure out what's really going on? How do we figure out that there's more to this story than what we heard in the news? Well, I want to invite my friend up here. His name is Ahmed. And Ahmed, I met through some mutual friends. Ahmed is from Somalia, and he's an immigrant here. And Ahmed and I most recently were at a 40th birthday party together. And I had some conversation. I think we started with football and how spicy that shrimp paste stuff was.
That's right, yeah.
But we had just this great conversation, and I learned to know that Ahmed is this wise and kind man. And as we were imagining these conversations about our neighbors, and particularly the neighbors that we can be afraid of, I thought, what a great person to bring into this conversation. So welcome, Ahmed, and thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
You can take a seat. So let me start, Ahmed, by telling the single story that I was bought about you. So I worked in LSS Refugee Services a couple years ago, and I worked with resettled refugees. And I made this assumption that Ahmed must be, because he's from Somalia in Minnesota, he must be a resettled refugee. But that is not actually the case.
That's
so
right, yeah.
Could you just tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, basically, before the civil war broke in Somalia, my mom was, I won't say very smart, but she was kind of predict or always proactive to issues that was facing my country. And what she decided was, like, when the civil war was on the outskirts of the main city, to flee and to move to a smaller country now in the East Africa called Djibouti, so we can be safe and settle with my other extended family. So that's how we moved from Mogadishu to Djibouti. Then while we were there, we stayed for a while. Then we decided that we couldn't afford to live in Djibouti, it was very expensive. Then we have to move again to India to live and finish our schools. Then I lived there for 6-7 years.
Wow.
With my other family. Then we luckily got a sponsor from my uncle who lived in New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, that fortunately came 20 years ago as a scholarship from the United States. And that's how we ended in the US.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what year was that that you moved to the US?
Yes.
In what year?
It was 1998.
1998.
Yeah, and that's also a very historical day with the US history. Was the day that Bill Clinton was telling the true story of his relationship with Monica.
Oh.
Yeah, and I won't be able to forget that too.
Yeah. Wow, what a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man! And then you moved up to Minneapolis, or was it you moved up to St. Paul?
Yeah, my cousin I was leaving because I didn't get my paper on time. Met a girl here in Minneapolis, and I didn't know where is Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I was depending on him, and he was like, "I'm moving to Minneapolis. If you want to come, you can come with me. Otherwise, I will. You have to survive a struggle in New Mexico."
Yeah,
and that's how I ended here.
Wow, okay. And you've been here in Minneapolis and St. Paul since?
Since 1999.
Since 99.
March, yeah, 1999.
Okay. And you and your wife, Faiza, and your three children.
Yeah, I have Faiza, my wife, and two boys and a daughter.
Wonderful. Okay, so let me just start this. Entering into this conversation with you, even asking you to do this conversation, I felt really awkward. You know, like, because it's strange. I mean, we don't normally do this kind of stuff, right? I mean, hey, we're gonna, you know, talk about neighbors that we're afraid of. Do you want to talk? Do you want to come? yeah. so I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, getting beyond that awkwardness and getting beyond maybe those fears, like, what if I ask the wrong question? Or what if I say something that offends? How do you like, or how do you think that people can be approached when there is that difference between people? And maybe we're afraid, or maybe we're from different cultures. Like, how do we go about initiating some kind of interaction?
Mainly when I moved to the US, I used to be friendly, I used to be social.
Yeah.
Then when I moved here, I had some neighbors that never talked to you. Then I kind of got their adaptation of their culture. I was like, oh, if this person doesn't want to talk to you, you have to keep their, you know, space and not talk to them. Or if they say hello, just hi, and you keep walking and take care of your business.
Sure.
Yeah, but usually what I do is that I take the light rail to work or the bus. I try to talk to them or ask them, like, how's your day, or where are you heading?
Yeah.
Some small, short, you know, conversation. Then you never know, that can take you to you might know somebody he knows, or yeah. he might work somewhere that you work, or
right.
you know, and then that kind of bring you closer
yeah.
to know more and exchange phone numbers and
right.
emails and have coffee and
yeah.
talk more. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The simplicity of, hey, where are you headed? Mm. Or where are you going on this light rail trip? Or how about the weather?
Yeah, yeah. You know? We usually don't have back home, how's the weather? Because
yeah.
every day is the same.
Yeah, nice. Okay. So weather questions work here, maybe
yeah.
not everywhere. So
yeah.
that is
yeah.
not a single story, but yeah. anyways, maybe
yeah.
Maybe you can ask that somewhere where the weather's always
That's
the same
it.
And they'll
yeah.
they'll say, hey, there's some other questions you can ask. Here's one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, part of the reason why I asked you to speak and have a conversation with me, Ahmed, is because that you're a Muslim. And how is it that your Muslim faith, what does that mean for you? Or what does it bring to your life?
Mainly, Islam is submission of God.
Mm.
It's peace.
Mm.
And it brings me a way of life to care, to love, to help those who need, and to mostly follow certain moral ethics, not to hurt, not to, you know, lie to other family and friends.
Yeah.
And that's what it brings to me, is to be very kind, be loving, be compassionate.
Mm.
That's what it brings to me.
Sure.
Yeah, and to know your neighbor, to talk to them, to help them if they need, like even in the winter, if there's someone
yeah.
older wants to help with the snow.
Help
that,
shovel.
Yeah, shovel, yeah. And that's what it brings to me.
Yeah.
And to make friends with
yeah.
the people I live with, or I will be living for time or ages to come.
Yeah.
That's what it brings to me, or that's what it is.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So this morality and this love for neighbor is what I hear, you know, at the heart of that.
Yeah.
And are you a part of a mosque?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a small mosque on Como, yeah.
It's a small mosque on
yeah,
Como?
Yeah.
Okay. And how often do you go?
Lately, with the life that we have to work, you
yeah.
have to take care of the kids,
yeah.
you have to do things,
yeah.
I've not been very close.
Sure.
I feel that I'm not connected very close to
yeah.
my faith
yeah.
because of the demanding of life and all those issues that
yeah.
we have. But I love to be more connected
yeah.
or go 5 times a day because it's kind of hard now when you go to work 8 a.m. to 4
yeah.
to be at the mosque 5
yeah.
times a day.
Yeah. yeah.
That's what is giving me
sure.
a tough time.
Yeah.
yeah.
So I asked you that question intentionally because I wanted everyone here to feel like they could relate with your mosque attendance.
Yeah. yeah, yeah. No, I try Friday because Friday is the same as a Sunday or
yeah.
Saturday for the Jewish.
Yeah.
It's so hard to go from work to drive, then come back, and you have 1 hour lunch.
Yeah.
And that's also a very small
yeah.
time frame. Yeah.
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 yeah. So, so I think you're referring to like some of the practices of the Muslim faith. Can you tell me a little bit about those, like the prayer and zakat? And
okay.
can you just tell us
yeah,
a little bit about those?
The five pillars of Islam is the first will be submission to God without being connected to any other God.
Mm.
Then the second one will be the prayer. You have to pray 5 times a day from sunrise to sundown. And then the next one will be the zakah. You have to donate some portion of your income to the needy or to the mosque or to some help for
yeah.
that have been assessed. And then there will be the hajj. You have to go, if you can afford, to Mecca.
Hmm.
And the other one is the morning prayer, the submission, the salat is the prayer, the zakah, and the fasting.
Oh,
the
yeah.
fasting of the month of the Ramadan.
Yeah.
From sunrise to sundown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when does Ramadan begin this year?
This year is going to begin, I believe, June 18.
June 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's hard now because the day is longer.
Yeah.
And from.
Wow.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. It's like 15, 17 hours
of fasting.
No water, no solid food,
nothing. So, what does that participation in that Ramadan, what is that all about?
That's a good question. That Ramadan or the fasting month is to understand the needy, the people who doesn't have food, people who can't drink, the sick people, and is to know that there is a power that wanna show you compassion, wanna show you love, so you can understand and give more to the other person instead of taking to your for yourself. It shows you that strength.
And with this, with this conversation that we're having today, it seems to me like that helps you see the bigger story. Like you actually experience hunger and thirst, and that gives you a piece of the story of a person who's actually experiencing that, which leads to this compassion in you to serve that person because you've now experienced or entered into a little part of their story. So I really admire that practice of Ramadan, and I'm very intrigued by it. Maybe I might have the strength one day to participate in it.
Of course, indeed, yeah.
I'd be good. I'd be better at the Eid Mubarak, the celebration afterwards, rather. But anyways, we're all work in progress, right? This, I think, is a good question to ask. And let me just say now, too, that we're going to open some time up after Ahmed and I speak. If you have any questions in the community that you want to shout out, so be thinking of those, and we'll welcome those questions later. But so where was I? What was the single story maybe that you were functioning with when you thought about America, or when you thought about white America in particular?
Mainly when I was in India is the time I had a chance to watch American TV or learn something about America, because my uncle was living and I was like, oh, I should go to this promised land or land of opportunity. You can make a good living, you can be rich, you can, you know, have that big house with the white friends, you know, and you have a good family. But then it's when you come, it's a totally different place.
Wow.
It's a place of hardship. You have to work hard for everything. You have to participate. You have to, I never knew that only on Roots or some shows that the racism, it's tough. It's a real issue. I never knew, or I never faced myself. And that's what was mostly tough for me to digest or to understand.
Wow.
How is, you know, used, and how is the institution or everything can be based. And that's what was my single story that had just beauty, love, fun. Yeah, I didn't know there is the other side of hate and rejection and all that stuff. Yeah.
So how have you been dealing with that kind of disillusionment? But also, I mean, you've been here for over a decade, and you know, you're working and you're raising a family, and so how do you push through, and what has some of that disillusionment led to?
Mainly, you get to a time that you're confused, you don't have the true story, or even if you go online and you try to search and educate yourself, it will be just from one source to another source, unless you speak to your coworker or your friend who are from different race, different religion, then you don't get the exact picture.
Yeah.
And that's why I always try to, like you or Daniel or Sarah, who's from here, to like talk to them and say, how do you deal with this when something's happening at work? Or how do you navigate these many issues? And that's where I get help from.
Or
from my boss, from my neighbor, or some people who are born in the U.S. and who know how to understand and talk to them to those issues. Yeah.
Nice. I think it's really important that we ask this question, and I kind of alluded to it before we started. But you know, with these recent arrests of some young Somali men here in Minnesota, again, it'd be really easy to buy into the skepticism or the single story that you know, Somali men are potential terrorists. And so what would you speak to that situation, and what would you maybe share, because you maybe know more of the story. Could you share with us a little bit about your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, mainly I was surprised when I saw in the news, because I thought we had problem a few years ago when Ethiopia invaded Somalia, and I thought we were striving to, you know, help and advise kids, Somali kids who came at a younger age or some who were born. But then now the ISIS and the Syria issue came back, and it's a very disappointing. But mainly what is the problem with the Somali kids is that they are in between two cultures. Yeah, they are not Somalis, they are not Americans.
Wow.
They are in this middle pathways that they don't know even their identification, that they cannot identify as a Somali or Americans.
Yeah.
And mainly is the issue with education, with the socioeconomics problems, with employment, all those things that maybe now very small to put money on it. So at least it can be an investment in the long term.
Yeah.
Instead of sending now, they are 19 to 22, if we send them to jail for 30, 40 years, it will be more money that they can stay in jail than if they were productive American citizens and paying tax and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So even our prison system working against us.
Wow. It's kind of a investment now in the jails, like people are investing money in the stocks to make more prisons and more jails.
Crazy. There's a lot of systemic issues that we bump up against, and it's interesting. I mean, those problems can seem so big, and it's easy to lose hope. It's easy to maybe just throw your hands up and give up, but I think that's what we're here talking about today. Maybe that it starts with us. It starts with our own selves, about breathing and taking that deep breath and seeing one another as fellow human beings. And those relationships, those connections that we make between individuals, those are the things that are going to make the difference in the world. And I wonder, you know, I've just heard recently in St. Paul that I think 38% of students in St. Paul are white. And so, you know, that's a really baffling statistic for a lot of us who make these assumptions about a white majority. That information, you know, what does it mean for our young people as well? Like, I think about all our teenagers who are helping to lead GForce, and you know, in the schools where they are interacting, and people of all sorts of different ethnicities and from all over the country, all over the world, are together in these schools, and what an opportunity for relationships to make a difference in the people's lives. You know, especially with maybe folks who are immigrants who are having this identity. Like, who am I, you know, and do I belong? And do you have anything else that we should share? And we'll open up some time for some questions as well.
Yeah, mainly I was moved with the YouTube song.
Oh, yeah.
Of that one of hate is something that is taught, you know, it's not, you don't born to hate.
Right.
And it affects me myself too, you know. When you are a parent and you don't know how to talk to your kids, like because I have a 6-year-old who always running and trying to play with other kids in the park, but they may be reserved. But then the parents is like, "Hey, you gotta stay on your little areas, don't talk," and you don't see it. That's it's kind of like teaching them, "Hey, don't go to that person. You gotta stay, you know, on your own way." Yeah. And that's what it is like myself is. Something new that I'm learning today here.
Man, it can all be solved on the playground, right?
Yeah.
Well, are there any questions? And You can just shout them out, and Ahmed is gracious to receive those, and maybe you're courageous enough to ask them, but if you have any questions, shout those out or raise a hand, and we can... Yeah, Tav.
Well, not so much a question. It's going on. So, who wants an accent?
So, I have an accent.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
في عنا. Alhamdulillah. So do. Thank you. Thank you. Mat Santai.
Just want to say a few words. And what Mat Santai? Yeah. Thank you for coming and joining us. I work with the Somali East African community for about 15 years.
Oh, nice, nice.
And
thank
I
you.
Just appreciate you coming and speaking a bit about some of the cultural and the religion. So
thank you.
Thank you, Tav.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, can you do a little translation of what did he
say?
Yeah,
he was saying good morning.
Yeah.
And you are welcome. And how's your family?
Oh, very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I had no idea, Tav. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. The first part of the question, what I miss is that close to my family, my mom, my cousins, the whole extended family, that's what I missed. And the freedom or the everlasting to go outside and just without fear, without being scared by anybody. And the second thing, what I gain or am grateful for here is the Midwestern values. Work hard, respect, love, compassion. That's what I really liked here.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Any other questions? Oh, yeah. Anne.
How were you treated in India?
India, yeah. India is it's a very great country. I love it, and I always try to go back. It's one of the most safest place I've been in the world. You can sleep outside, nobody will bother you, and everybody is welcome. A little few issues, that is not a big deal, but it's a great country. Mm. I love it, yeah. Everybody treated me well, the people, the shopkeepers, the students, the teachers, the system, everything was very nice. I really feel bad that I moved, but then what do? Sometimes you have to move on with your life. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great country.
Very cool.
Yeah, and don't forget the food too. They have the best food.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, the dal puri.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oof. Yeah. Sandy.
I would like to apologize to you for the neighbors that were unkind to you, but when I grew up in North Dakota, I never had seen a live person of a different skin color than my own. But my parents liked the musicians and they liked the boxers, and on TV we got to watch a little bit of TV. But the thing that really helped me understand as I became older and became, you know, into multicultures was if we cut ourselves, our blood is the same color.
Mm. That's right. Yeah.
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 That everyone has feelings, they have desires,
Yeah.
It's like, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and going off that, Sandy, it's really interesting, you know, when we think about Islam and we think about Judaism and Christianity, we all speak of the one same creator, God. You know, we're all people of the same book and this common source, you know, this one source that we have of God. It's a very, it's profound and a beautiful thing. But yeah. Yeah, Brenda.
To go to Syria.
Yeah.
And that they are not guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
That's
right.
Right.
Thanks
that's
for making
right.
that
Thank
point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The people arrested are innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other piece is we need to be attending more to the systematic problems that are causing young people to feel like the only community they have is the one that promise, you know, that is promised by, you know, hatred or, you know, I don't know, maybe, do you know what I'm talking about here?
Yes, I know, it's just the disconnection of, you know, when you see someone who is different than you,
yeah.
or even if you see a Somalian now,
yeah.
you're a little afraid from, it's
yeah.
like, oh, maybe another terrorist is,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
in process, but they're different, or
yeah.
we are different, you know,
yeah.
even sometimes we just jump to the gun, to,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure,
one.
Oh yeah, John.
Just curious about what your family's experience with public schools, and you feel welcome to the understanding about your culture and who you are?
Yeah, my son, he's first grade now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's at times that there is issues with the school district or the teacher that you can see some problems, because when it's just some rumors or something that somebody say, hey, they don't like you because you are from this race or from this religion, you never understand or face when it happens to you or hits you, you know. It's tough sometimes. It's like some few thing I can talk to the teacher or to the system. But it's still a big problem that I have with the city of St. Paul, St. Paul School District.
Mm.
Yeah, and he's in first grade. I don't know how you're going to go when
yeah.
it goes to college or
yeah.
to high school.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's make things better together.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, and Ahmed, if you're willing and people have questions, maybe you can answer some folks' questions shortly after. But I just want to thank you for taking the time and joining me for this conversation and for being a friend.
Okay,
and,
no,
really
thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And I like it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, you know, an Ahmed story is Ahmed's story, and it's not every other Somali American story. And it's important that we are asking the questions and we're taking those small steps that we can do to learn more of a story. Maybe it's going and visiting a market. Maybe it's trying some amazing food that is not our own. I tell you one thing, like, I lived with my great aunt, she was 93. And I lived with her for a year. And man, if I had to eat potatoes and turkey like for the rest of my life, oh, it would be terrible. All this white Norwegian food, it was awful. Anyways, but just I want to remember back to that Good Samaritan story and that story that Jesus told about who is this real neighbor. And I think Jesus is telling us God's single story. And God's single story is this. It's that love can turn strangers into neighbors. And that's what we're in the business of. That's what we're trying to live into together. So let's be Jacob's Well together and figure out how do we love. strangers into neighbors.